Hiya and welcome to Into It, the HuffPost UK entertainment podcast. I'm Daniel Welsh and I'm picking apart this week's entertainment headlines with Ash Percival and Francesca Syrett. This week we're dissecting the controversial BBC salary report, looking at why certain blokes still can't get into the idea of a female Doctor Who, and we will be testing our knowledge of the week's headlines in the week's quiz. But first, after 7 weeks, the TV show everyone is talking about.
I'm so excited.
Are you all right? Just need a minute.
Just need a second.
The TV show everyone's talking about, Love Island, is coming to an end. It's been the biggest series ever of the hit show, pulling in some of the highest viewing figures that ITV2 has ever had. Whether you love it or hate it, whether you're hooked on every episode or avoiding it like the plague, whether you're gutted it so far or you're like me, everyone's got an opinion on it. So between the three of us, we've got a devotee, we've got a recent convert, and we've got me. So what are the lessons that we've learned from the past 7 weeks of Love Island, and what can other people learn from the show?
Okay, do you want to start, Ash? Because, like, from the beginning,
I've been there from the start.
Yeah, you got in at the ground
floor.
To be fair.
Did you watch last season?
No, so this is the first year I've watched through and through. I saw, like, bits of other years, but this is the first one where I've been a committed, dedicated viewer. And a committed, dedicated viewer I have been. I'm just distraught. It's coming to an end, to be quite honest with you. I literally don't know what I'm going to do. I think I've got premature separation anxiety from them all.
All right. So when I answer your question, what are the lessons we can learn from the most recent series of Love Island?
Well, the men are terrible, and that Camilla basically should be the nation's new sweetheart.
Oh my God, I disagree with you so badly. It's just not even funny. Like, I literally, like, Ash and I have, like, daily, like, discussions around this. So
first of all, you don't agree the men are terrible?
No, the Camilla bit.
Okay.
Men are terrible. But also, women have just been just as bad in this season too, to be fair.
Oh, interesting. Like, what have you learned? What can we all learn from it?
What life lessons?
I've learned that all your dating fears actually are true and they're not in your head because you see them being played out on the screen in front of you.
That's dark.
Which is very dark, which is another reason why the show is awful. But at the same time, it gives you so much hope as well. And it sounds so silly, but I just think...
Who's given us hope?
When the couples kind of actually get past all the issues that they have...
and resolve them.
Yes. And actually see the light at the end of the tunnel.
It's quite heartwarming in places.
It's so heartwarming. Like,
I mean, they're all quite, like, terrible people, and I would never want to be friends with about 90% of them. But...
sounds like gripping viewing. Who's given us the most hope?
Oh, see, I don't get you when you're saying this. I just don't get you.
Because I think, you know, everyone talks about in the show, are they fake? Are they doing it to get the prize money? Are they doing it just for the game? That kind of thing. And I just think with Liv, she 100% was herself to the point where she discriminated herself so bad where people hated her. But that was just who she was. She didn't even pretend not to be that.
I think she's just messed up, isn't she?
She is. But she didn't do that for attention.
If she wanted that prize money, she probably should have been less of herself.
Do you know what I mean? She could have easily just, like, shut up shop a couple of weeks ago. Chris would have still loved her. It'd been more smooth sailing and they probably would have had a better chance of winning, to be fair. But she didn't.
But I read today they are now third favourite to win, which I think a few weeks ago I couldn't have imagined that.
No, I just think that what I've really learned is that you think your opinion is the opinion of many, but actually I disagree with, like, even my sister watching it. We'll watch the same episode, but both have different opinions on what's happened in front of us all the time.
I think on a, like, a more, like, serious level, like, my friend actually wrote a very good piece on a rival website, which I'm not going to mention, but it was about kind of diversity within Love Island. And I think that's been something that I think has been the elephant in the room, like, throughout this whole series of Love Island, as much as I've loved it.
Well, to be fair, sorry to interrupt, it hasn't been the elephant in the room on this podcast, because there hasn't been a week gone by where Love Island's been mentioned and I've not gone, there are no gay people on this show.
It's awful. It's so bad.
Which is, I've got written down for lessons that I've learned about Love Island. People will complain about a lack of representation and then watch a show anyway. Like, literally, if I mention the fact that there are no gay people on Love Island, there are three reactions. There are, well, number one, well, how would they include gay people because of the couple and up? That is true, that is a mathematical issue, but also, that's not my issue, that's the issue of Love Island producers. Two, people go, oh yeah, it's a shame, and then nothing. Or people are like, oh yeah, they should do some sort of gay spin-off. No, no spin-off. That should be the regular show, should involve everybody. 100%. There's my piece on Love Island. Yeah, you were right what you were saying.
I thought you were going to say there was going to be a number three.
No, that was the number three.
Oh.
Is that people say, yeah, throw in the spin-off. But no, no spin-off. Regular show should include gay people.
100%. Completely.
Not just gay people. The whole LGBTQ queer community, the whole gang, needs to be involved.
I don't think it would be that
hard
to do. They
just need to sit in a room and come up with how they could rework the format for it to work. Because obviously, yeah, it wouldn't be able to work as is, but they just kind of need to sit down and write, guys, this needs to be more inclusive. How do we change the format?
I would be really disappointed if they don't. And I don't think they will for next year.
No, because they're on a winning formula.
Yeah, and because it's like so successful, but I would be like completely disappointed if they do.
They say that, to be fair, not to be fair, but just to point this out, they do say that people are free to couple up with whoever they want in them.
That is true, and they do accept LGBT plus contestants. I did apply for Love Island a few weeks ago when they said that they were still looking for people.
Did you send it off?
Yeah, I sent it off. I was ready to ditch the lawyers.
Oh, okay, so I didn't know that. So they've just chose cast members who are straight, well, yeah, rather than saying that it's... Okay, I'm not saying it's right, but I just didn't know that.
It's open to all. And there's a drop-down box where you identify how you are gender-wise, how you are sexuality-wise, all that business. But they've just chosen not to go for anybody who lives any sort of alternative lifestyle.
So last year they did have two like bisexual girls.
They did.
But I do feel like when you're sort of throwing in token sort of like things in that, it felt very much like we're putting in two hot like bisexual girls that are going to couple up and get with each other. Kind of felt that they'd just done it for kind of the headlines and the
rather than male gays
for actually be like, right, let's actually represent the bisexual community.
What I'd like to say as well, in a more positive light of Love Island, because I feel like I come on here and I slag off Love Island every week, but I don't hate it completely. I'm not completely blind to it. What I've also written down is, in terms of lessons that we've learned, is that there are platforms to have serious discussions off a show that is seemingly quite fluffy, as we saw when Johnny and Camilla had that huge row about feminism, yeah? And she like binned him off because he said all of that stuff about feminism. So I think that there is, you know, I'm glad to see that a show that is being watched by millions of people can also.
And in me, do you want to talk about what like Camilla said last night? Will we be able to phrase it better?
I haven't seen last night's episode yet.
Oh, okay.
Got one to catch up on.
Okay, well, spoiler, last night's episode, they had this talent show and, you know, there was raps and roastings and like songs, but.
Raps and roastings, is it?
Yeah, actually was.
Sorry, I missed it.
It's a thing.
Stole the name of my autobiography title there.
And
just brush past that pretend.
Yeah, that's me laughing. And Camilla chose to do it wasn't a speech, it was like a reading, and it was basically about how she's so happy the experience she's had, but she spoke about something about the refugee camp she's visited or plans to do more in the future and how it's now a platform for her.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and like when she went on a date with Jamie, you know, he was like,
why don't you like this woman? She's great.
Yeah, but like he was like, we're going to go to Ibiza. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to go to some refugee camps too. And like, I have no doubt that Camilla is using this as a platform for all that kind of stuff, which is awesome too.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to see what she does next.
Yeah.
What Camilla did next.
Also, what I think that Love Island has shown is that event television isn't dead.
100%.
So when you get people like Simon Cowell, when the X Factor ratings are slumping, and he goes, yeah, but people don't watch live TV anymore. Well, you know, when Chris Evans was getting slagged off on Top Gear, he was going, well, that's not how people watch TV anymore. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Because if I log on to Twitter at 9 p.m. on any weeknight or a Sunday, everybody is talking about Love Island. Nobody's talking about anything else other than Love Island. And that just goes to show that that audience is still there. People are still switching their TVs on. And also that people are still interested in reality shows that don't have celebrities in.
Yeah. I think that's the most interesting
thing. Because
Caroline Flack even said that. She was like, I don't want to do it like a celebrity Love Island because I don't think it will work. Which is interesting now when you look at Big Brother. The reverse is true. It's like no one's watching the civilian series, but the celebrity series still pulls in viewers.
What as well, I am interested to see how Love Island does next year. Because do you remember when Big Brother, way back in the day, a decade ago, started getting bigger and bigger? People started to just get in it for the fame.
Yeah.
And I think that next series will be the year. Well, it depends, actually, how big the contestants are when they get off the show. and how much we're still talking about them in 6 months, 7 months, 8 months' time, what the contestants are like.
You're so right. You could go either way. Within 2 weeks, we could not be talking about any of them ever again. Or one of them actually could have a really clever agent.
A couple of them have managed to stay in the limelight from last year. And obviously, like, last year had, like, a lot less viewers than this year.
Yeah, and Nathan and Cara, who won last year, they've just joined TOWIE.
Yeah.
So, like, they are, and she's pregnant. They've just split up, so they've got that going on. Not that I'm saying that their breakup is a storyline or anything. It is genuinely happened to them. But it is, you know, where you're still talking about them a year on. I think the thing is, Big Brother, it got really big when Jade Goody came out. And she was the one who kept the media profile going. So I think it's, like, basically, who's going to be the Jade Goody of Love Island?
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting because at the moment, I can't see a particular couple, like, staying in the... It's just hard to imagine them having, like, what their place will be and where they will slot into this kind of, like, world on the outside.
Yeah.
But I guess in the next few weeks, we're going to find that.
Can't you imagine Liv on Loose Women in 6 months?
She's a loose cannon, is what she is.
Absolutely.
She name it Loose Cannon.
Live on Loose, that's what I'm rooting for. I think she would be so good to watch because I think she would just say that she was, and she'd be so controversial.
She loves a moan, doesn't she? She just
don't
loves
all,
a good old whinge.
Don't we all?
The thing is, as well, you're talking about Camilla. It'd be interesting to see if she can, like, get some sort of ITVB investigative kind of, you know, she could do, like, something like Dawn O'Porter used to do and do, like...
Yeah. To me, that's the only way that she will, I think that she will stay in the limelight, is if she can do something like that. I don't think you're going to see her falling out of nightclubs on the cover of OK magazine every other week.
No,
I don't think that's what she's in it for. But
because she hasn't met me yet, that's why. Should we move on? My goodness, the story that everyone was talking about this week was the BBC publicly revealing the salaries of its highest paid stars for the first time. So this was all part of new government rules. Because it's publicly owned, the BBC was required to publish the names and salaries of everyone earning more than £150,000 a year. Sadly, my name did not feature. Fingers crossed for next year, more than 150K. There's a few things that I want to talk about off the back of this really big story. But first off, do we even think that the government did the right thing in making the BBC release this list? Are these stars' wages in the public interest? Obviously, we pay the licence fee as long as we've got TVs and we're law-abiding citizens. Do we therefore have a right to know how much the people that we're watching every day are pocketing from that?
I feel very torn. Without wanting to get too political, I do feel like it's a kind of a deliberate attempt by the Tories to sort of shake the BBC and knock it.
Oh, bloody hell. Not wanting to get too political, but All right. All right, Camilla.
That's kind of how I see it.
Ross Kemp did say that on Good Morning Britain on Wednesday. He said, we should be wary of the agenda of certain people. Whether or not you believe that is up to you, of course.
But equally, I am very much for the fact that we pay for the BBC, we fund the BBC, we should know exactly where our money is going. And, you know, like, some of the salaries are obscene. They are obscene.
So I've got two... For me, there's two issues. There's obviously the pay gap, which you can talk about in a second.
Yeah.
But for me, it's... You know, people saying, oh, that's this obscene amount of money for that. What do they even do? But I just feel like you've got... People have nothing to compare it to. Unless we know how much people on commercial radio stations, commercial TV stations get. And then you can be... Then you can compare it to see, is
it
obscene or not? Because at the end of the day, yes, we're paying for it. So we want the best talent on the BBC. And the way that the BBC can get that best talent is by paying them a lot of money.
Yeah, they've got to be competitive.
So they've got to be competitive.
They?
So, like, they can't offer a lower price if they're going to get way more money on another channel. So it's just say, yes, Chris Evans, $2 million is a massive amount.
But then maybe the argument is maybe they should be investing in new talent rather than relying on sort of the same old faces that they're paying millions of pounds to do the...
I completely agree with you, but it's successful and it works. And when you want Strictly, you want two famous faces that you know and love rather than an upcoming talent to host it on Saturday.
But also, you're seeing, you know, new talent. That's what we need. But if, you know, you've done a job for 10 years and then suddenly they just go, all right, we've decided you've earned enough. New talent's coming in. You know, Strictly's been going for how many years? 13 years or something? If they just said Tess Daly now, we think you've been doing the job for long enough.
I think she's been doing it for too long already.
I think one series was too long for Tess, but we'll get onto that in a minute as well. What, you know, if they were to bring in new stars every 10 years, would that not be ageist as well? If you're doing a good job, why should you be
replaced? Could you imagine the backlash?
Well, I can imagine it, and rightly so.
Yeah, exactly. No, I get it. I just think, you know, it's very funny that people have been asking, like, Susanna Reid, and, you know, how much money are you getting? Obviously, they're very shtum. They don't need to tell anyone.
Yeah.
But until we know, I don't think we can start having our opinions on what's too
much. I would
rather
know that Chris Evans, who is pretty inoffensive day to day, was getting 2.2 million, which is how much he's on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Compared to Piers Morgan on Good Morning Britain, who every day is publishing quite toxic things on Twitter, putting quite bad vibes under the breakfast TV scene, compared to BBC Breakfast, which is generally quite, you know, family friendly and all that business. I would rather that money was going, if it has to go somewhere, I mean, I'd rather it was going, well, to me, actually, I'd rather it was going there. And then, you know, to other good causes, but, you know, also, Trisha Goddard did, not a name drop, Trisha Goddard, for some reason.
Trisha Goddard, who hasn't been mentioned for 10 years.
Yeah, I'm sorry, how did that even happen?
Well, I'll tell you. So Trisha Goddard was on Good Morning Britain yesterday. Yeah. Nice to get out of the house. And she was saying that what we don't know about someone like Chris Evans is that he probably owns a production company. And so that 2.2 million that's going in his pocket will also be paying for staff. It'll be paying for, like, I mean, I don't know if this is true of Chris Evans, but she's saying of the high earning stars, a lot of them will, that money won't just be going to them and then they're off to Ibiza for 3 weeks. Mm. It's like it'll be going to them to pay for other dimensions of the show that we're watching.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that because I just don't know, but I feel like what I saw a lot on Twitter when it announced was, oh my God, Claudia Winkleman gets more than Tess, and because they just looked at the initial stats. And it's actually like, well, no, because Claudia does, like, the radio on a Sunday. Yeah. So that's why she's getting paid more because of that. And I just thought the information...
Yeah, they had that with the breakfast ride, didn't they?
Yeah.
It's tested strictly once a year.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think, like, even how people consume that data was getting a bit of a mixed too. So that's even, like, caused even more confusion and got really angry about things that even, like, that's not where we should be putting the anger at.
Very quickly, what do we expect to see when the same figures are published next year, and what do we want to see when the same figures are published next year? Because Francesca, you touched on there the disparity between certain stars, and so there's the gender pay gap, which is obviously a lot of people are talking about. Only one in three of the people on this list of stars earning more than 150k were women, but there's also a big gap in terms of ethnic diversity, and BAME stars earning more than 150k compared to white stars. So what do we want to see next year, and what do we think we will see?
Well, I think the pay gap is interesting because obviously it's there and everyone can see it in black and white. But equally, like, those ones that are earning the biggest salaries are also the ones that are doing the most work. So Chris Evans is earning the most because he's working like 5 days a week on this breakfast show, right? Why are we not giving those jobs to women?
That's it. It's that the work is being done by men and the opportunities aren't there for women, right?
Yeah.
Is that what we all agree
on? I think that's where this pay gap comes from, is the women aren't earning that.
In the entertainment industry, we should stress, not in society.
Yeah. On a whole.
They're not being given those big roles to earn those big salaries to start off with.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yes. And in order to close the gap for in a year's time, then yes, there will have to fundamentally be change in who will be taking the jobs, and they will have to be more women, ethnic minority people to get those numbers close. But in terms of what we can expect next year, if nothing changes, then I don't think that the backlash would be just too heavy for them to accept. Mm. Like, they can't not do anything. So I think they're under immense pressure now to kind of sort their shit out by next year, because they can have no progression.
The thing is, though, I think they've got a bit of a dilemma, because a lot of the top paid people are the really successful and really popular people. So kind of what you were saying about Love Island earlier, like, what are they going to do? Are they just going to push out, like, popular people? Like, how are they going to kind of manage this? You can't just kick Chris Evans off the breakfast show.
No, but one thing that's been suggested is that, so Chris Evans is earning an absolute shit ton of money, let's be real. He's earning a lot of money. So one proposed plan would be to dock some of these higher earning men's pay and spread it a bit more evenly.
Yeah.
But would that solve the problem of representation? That would solve the earning problem, but we would still have the biggest BBC jobs being done by straight white men.
Yeah.
It doesn't, which is obviously a problem.
I think the kind of the thing about the jobs hasn't really been touched on so much, I would say, in kind of like the media reporting around it. It has been very focused on the pay gap. Mm. But I think the pay gap is a result of representation in these roles, which I think is what they need to look at first and foremost.
So moving on a similar topic of female representation on screen at the BBC, Jodie Whittaker over the weekend was announced as the new lead in Doctor Who. She'll be taking over the lead of the Time Lord from this December, which is great news, right?
Yeah. Yes, I'm so excited.
Yeah, great.
Well, seemingly not everyone thinks so. So basically, there have been a few, let's be real, crybabies on the internet been complaining about a woman being cast in the role of Doctor Who. It's really boring. It's really, really boring to see it all happen again. It's frustrating. It's an annoyance. It's a pain. We should be celebrating. In fact, we shouldn't even be celebrating, really.
No. Do you know what?
Should be like, oh, cool.
For me, we have to go through this shit of people, like, getting their knickers in a twist. And we'll get through that, like, short term. But I'm just hoping we can get through this. So long term, this will not be a discussion anymore. And then after Jodie, the conversation could be a man or a woman can be the Doctor. Because it's the Doctor.
That's it.
It's the Doctor. It doesn't have any specifications on if it is male or female. So then once Jodie has done her time as the Doctor, it can then be a conversation, male or female, without any of this nonsense.
Right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read you out some complaints. We're just going to shoot them down, okay? Let's just
shoot it down in flames.
Obviously, it's generally good to be impartial. Sometimes it ain't. So, this was written in The Sun this week in an opinion piece. Doctor Who's 13th Time Lord turns out to be tragic Danny Latimer's rape counsellor mum from Broadchurch. That should go down a storm with a Saturday tea time audience of kids. So the argument here is that roles that she's played before are going to affect how people view her as the Doctor.
I'm sorry, so you're telling me those Saturday night tea time views of children have sat there and watched Broadchurch?
Also, the role is a rape counsellor. It's not a rapist. It's not, you know, not a bad person that she played. It was a person in a serious drama. More to the point, who did Peter Capaldi play before Doctor Who? He was in the thick of it, swearing his bastard head off. I mean, I can't really make an argument about swearing when I'm going to swear myself. But you know what the point is.
On top of that, you know, the other coverage that got Women's Announced was any sort of racy picture of Jodie looking anything other than a nun was then like, oh my God, how can this possibly be the Doctor?
Oh, it's a family show and she's had her boobs out on television before.
As if David Tennant wasn't being referred to as David Tennant the entire time that he was a doctor, right? The doctor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was literally, while he was still in the role, constantly being spoken about like that and encouraging it. And why shouldn't he?
Yeah, if he's got a big penis, shout about it. I would. I do. Cut that bit out.
That's my favourite thing to ever be recorded. Not just on this podcast.
Please don't cut it out.
Just ever. This is something I saw on Facebook. Doctor Who is a role model to young boys. Putting a woman in charge is detrimental to them.
I'm sorry, I can't.
What about young girls?
Well, we've all seen the videos, multiple videos of little girls seeing the announcement and their faces just lighting up. And it's just such a joy. I just think anyone who doesn't even think that's a thing to discuss just needs to, like,
I'm sorry, like, why are parents being that fragile about their children's masculinity? Why can't...
This isn't a parent. This is someone I went to school with. This is just someone I know.
Why can't little boys look up to women?
Well,
why
that's the other thing as well. Heroes? There's so much, rightly so, there's so much celebration of what this means for young girls who are going to have a brand new role model who's relying on brains and, you know, knowledge and all that good shit to get by. But also, if young boys can't look up to female role models, then that is a societal problem that Doctor Who is going to help confront. Also from The Sun, basically, they're talking about the past two Star Wars films, which have already had females in the lead roles. So it is frankly nauseating that the BBC should now get on their high horse and gallop into Wright-Onsville to plonk a woman sheriff in town. They're saying that it's stunt casting that doesn't need to be done anymore because other franchises have already got women in the lead.
Did we not have a discussion about putting more females in, like, those kind of opportunity jobs to close the pay gap?
But the thing is, like, Doctor Who needed a shake-up anyway. Like, the ratings are, like, falling off a cliff. Yeah. It's quite obvious that Stephen Moffat has kind of not left under a cloud, but it's kind of been like it's his time to go. So now more than ever, Doctor Who has needed a shake-up. So what did they want? Just to cast another straight white actor? Like... You know, we're being given someone here that it actually means something and is actually going to bring a new audience in and rejuvenate this struggling show.
And the other thing is, why is the argument that this has only been done for publicity? Why isn't it just that the best person got the job? Yeah. More to the point. Before we move on, who's going to watch Doctor Who now that there's a woman in charge?
I'll watch definitely the first episode.
Yeah, I'm going to do that thing that I always say where I'm going to watch the first episode and see how I go.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not going to watch it, but good luck to Jodie Whittaker because I'm sure she's going to do a fantastic job.
Only because I don't really watch Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not the target audience.
I watched it all the way through David Tennant's era.
Yeah,
and then I kind of fell out of it. But whether this will pull me back in, I don't know.
Oh, I hope it does, because I'm not going to watch it. So, but again, best of luck to it. I think that's just handled the backlash so far. Well, I mean, the backlash, the half backlash from people online perfectly. Obviously, we like to wrap up with a quiz. This week, it felt only fitting that we should centre it around the biggest story of the week. So, put very simply, we're going to do a higher or lower quiz. I'm going to throw out some BBC stars and you're going to tell me whether they earn more or less than the person before them. So I'm going to start with Ash and I'm going to start with Letitia Dean. She earns X amount of money. Does Jules Holland earn a higher or lower amount?
I'd say lower.
I'm afraid that you're off to a bad start. Oh. Jules Holland earns more than Letitia Dean. Letitia Dean is on, and these are just the lower boundaries of what they're on. So this is the lower half of the bracket. Letitia Dean is on at least 150K, and Jules Holland is on at least 200K. Which begs the question, Francesca Sire. Nick Grimshaw, higher or lower than Jules Holland?
Higher.
That is correct. Nick Grimshaw hosts the Radio 1 Breakfast Show, as well as presenting things like the Radio 1 Teen Awards, Radio 1's Big Weekend, and coverage from Glastonbury for the BBC.
Oh, aren't we lucky?
You're right there, Ash.
You got something to get off your chest about Grimmy?
No, it can remain on my chest, but I feel that everyone knows.
All right, I'm glad that you sort of voiced that. I like a bit of Grimmy, I've got to say. I think he's a nice lad. Northern and gay, I can relate. Ash, Peter Capaldi, is he on more or less money than Nick Grimshaw?
Less.
That is correct. He's been Doctor Who since Christmas 2013. Obviously, he's stepping down this year. And he's on 200K.
Oh, jammy bastard.
Tell you what, I hope he saved it up because he's not going to be on that in this time of the year, is he?
Pension pot, needs to think about.
Wow. Yeah, so congratulations on that one, Ash. Francesca.
Yeah.
Vanessa Feltz, is she on more or less than Peter Capaldi?
I was thinking about Vanessa before Chris in the mornings.
I always think about Vanessa Feltz. Well, Francesca thinks, let me tell everybody, that when I went to see Hidden Figures earlier this year, I sat next to Vanessa Feltz in the cinema.
Oh, Daniel, you've just dropped something down there. Oh, it's Vanessa Feltz's name.
Not the first time I've dropped it on this podcast either. Francesca?
It was Jules Holland, wasn't it?
No, it was. I'm afraid that I actually changed the subject so much that you've forgotten. It was Peter Capaldi. Who's earning more out of Peter Capaldi and Vanessa Feltz?
I reckon Peter Capaldi's on more.
I'm afraid that's incorrect. Ah. Vanessa Feltz is on £350,000 a year.
Good girl.
She is a busy girl as well. She does the pre-breakfast show on Radio 2, then hops over to Radio London where she does their regular breakfast show.
No way, I didn't know that.
She's a busy bee. And best of all, then she goes to the cinema and sits next to silly old Daniel.
Was she asleep on you there? Because I would have been.
She was the opposite of asleep. She was full of beans. She was loving the film. It was Hidden Figures, so who can blame her? Ash, over to you. Darcy Bustle. Who's earning more? Is it Darcy or is it Vanessa?
Less. She's earning less.
That is correct. Darcy Bustle is on $150,000. Vanessa is on $350,000.
Good.
So, again, you
to be fair, she does less than half the work Vanessa does.
Yeah, I didn't know about the other Breakfast Radio show. I just thought she'd done the pre-Chris Evans one, so...
Oh, mate, she's flying around all over the shop.
Yeah,
also,
awesome.
We should stress as well that these wages are only the wages that they're paid by the BBC.
Yeah.
So someone like Darcy Bustle, she's got shit going on all year. She's a busy bee too. She's just not that busy at the BBC.
I mean, she could kick back on 150 grand just from the BBC.
Oh, I certainly couldn't. I've got expensive taste. Francesca.
Hi.
There's been a lot of chat about the fact that Claudia Winkleman is on more money than Tess Daly. But who's on more money out of Darcy and Tess?
Tess.
That is correct. Tess is on 350K, same bracket as Vanessa Feltz. And she does Strictly every year. She also does the Children in Need telethon. You're going to mention my hometown hero, Alan Shearer.
Shearer!
That's the most
masked
about
him. How does a sports person come into this?
Because he's on the BBC, isn't he?
Match of the day. Again, probably the most masculine thing that's ever left my lips.
Well. but who's on more money is the real question. Alan Shearer, for general, I've written down good football blokey stuff, or Tess Daly for Strictly and Children's
I think Alan Shearer is probably on more.
Alan Shearer is on a lot of money. He is on more money than Tess Daly, that is correct. He does the football coverage for the BBC, and I've written down again, is generally a good bloke.
Wait, how much is he on?
Oh, sorry, 400,000.
Oh my God, and Claire Balding is like on 150K.
Claire Balding works hard.
Yeah, and I know she does a lot for other channels, so she obviously gets a lot of money from that, but she does loads with people. Sorry, that's side sport note.
And Sue Barker.
Sorry, Daniel.
No, I'm only pausing because the next question on the quiz, Claire Balding. Does she earn more or less than Alan Shearer?
That would be less.
That is correct. She earns, I think, actually, I'm going to give you another point because you got the figure correct. She's on 150K doing... Well, let's just say it, a shitload of sports coverage.
She really
wound Wimbledon, me up. She does the Olympics.
Yeah.
Good Morning Sunday on Radio 2, Sports Personality of the Year. She does all this good stuff and she gets 150K.
Claire Balding was the one I got most upset
about. I mean, I'm not going to cry about Claire Balding earning 150K, but by comparison, I
would. I know, this is the whole thing that this issue is presented, is that we're all sat there going, gosh, she's only on 150K when that is like a lot of money.
Yeah,
but she does a lot of work. It's the comparison, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And also like Gary Lineker, which probably may or not feature in the quiz later, I won't say how much, but a hell of a lot more. And it's like, apart from Match of the Day, I'm not too sure exactly what he does, so.
But you know what? I really like Gary Lineker.
And, you know,
I don't want to say he's my dream man, but he is.
Wow, that's, okay.
Oh, no, I absolutely love him. He's gobby. He's like a good father. He's always been really dignified about his divorce. He once pooed himself.
All the qualities you look for
in a
potential partner.
He sticks to his word. He sticks to his word.
He does.
I think he's fab. I think he's really, really fab. Anyway, that is actually the end of the quiz this week.
Oh.
So congratulations, Francesca, winning the quiz.
Yes.
So Francesca's won the quiz. We're all losing at life because we're on a lot less money than everybody at the BBC, apparently. And we'll be back next week for more Into It. Don't forget to subscribe on the Apple Podcasts Store. Laters!